We are burning down the house here Wednesday, August 4th, 2010, at heritageradionetwork.com. You already knew that because you found us. Thank you. Every week, our listenership grows. We are going viral on Burning Down the House, your weekly conversation about matters relating to design and architecture. Not only in New York, but everywhere around the world, because the human condition is uniform. Wherever you are, there you are. I am Curtis B. Wayne, architect and your host. This evening, we're brought to you by TechServe, the Manhattan-based store related to everything Macintosh. Also, they have a really kick-ass pro audio shop. Now, you hear the rush and the roar of the wind because we're here at the beach. We're in the garden of Roberta's restaurant in our HRN studios, and the AC is out. So this will be our annual Sweat Lodge Kiva event slash beach opportunity to talk about the heat, the pre-industrial world, when people didn't have electric fans. No, wait, that's not our subject today. We're going to talk about what's happening in New York. We have with us the editor of the E-Oculus E-Zine, or E-Zine, published online by the American Institute of Architects New York chapter, Jessica Sheridan. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yes, Jessica has a Master's of Architecture that she earned at RISD, the Rhode Island School of Design, which, in my mind, is really only famous because the Talking Heads went there briefly before they decided that they would find something that paid a little bit better than architecture. Although, I suppose in the beginning, they were wondering what the hell were they doing. She also has a Bachelor of Arts in Architecture with concentration in dance from Oberlin College. So later on, if you want to dance about what you... please, go for it. Also joining us as my guest interlocutor is Dr. Jacob Allspector of Allspector Architecture in New York City, my classmate from Cooper Union, a good friend, and always a good co-participant in our conversations in which we tear down, lay forth, and build up the ideas, passions, opinions, fantasies, obsessions, and other factors that inform and direct the creation of our built environment. Now, you know, here we are. Jessica happens to come to us through a very interesting chain of connections. Everybody in New York seems to be connected by 2 degrees of separation. And Jessica's mother is a neighbor and a good friend of Jane Kiefer, who is the sister-in-law of my very good friend Katie Kiefer and Joe Kiefer, and they all have houses out there in Twilight, which is this wonderful aggregation of shingle-style houses on the verge of the Catskills near Hunter Mountain, New York. And so did you grow up spending time there?
I didn't grow up spending time there, but we did move there quite a while ago. Maybe in 1998.
Well, that's a good while ago. Yeah. Now, but it's only a summer community, correct?
There are a couple of all-season houses.
Are you among those?
No, we are not.
All right. And does your house have logs and twisty branches in the porch?
It has birch trees that have been cut down and used as the railing, and the bark is still left on, and so it's very rustic.
Splendid. Did any of that experience somehow inform your own interest in architecture?
Well, I was already interested in architecture when my parents started building that house. They hired a local architect, Les Walker, who's done a lot of work up there as well. And so it was really interesting as someone who knew that I knew I was going to architecture school, and so it was really interesting to watch the construction process for the first time as a high school student.
Sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Did you do any of the work yourself?
No.
You didn't say, oh, let me at it?
No.
You weren't impelled, or you just liked watching?
I just liked watching.
And so you're like Chauncey in Being There. I like to watch.
You didn't even kibitz?
No, I mean, I didn't really have the opportunity. I was in school for most of the time that they were doing the construction.
Cool. But it's a brand, I mean, it's fairly brand new house, but built in that arcane sort of style that Twilight is known for, Twilight mm-hmm. Park.
Yeah, there is a one-room stone house that was the foundation for the rest of the house. So they kept the old stone house, and then they expanded upon it and added a living room and a couple of other bedrooms upstairs.
Super. That is so yeah. super. I am so done with the let's tear down the old structure and start anew because I, the owner, or I, the architect, can't have any connection to an existing context. So it's, you know, totally admirable.
Yeah.
Your parents architected a splendid choice there in respecting the social contract of the existing context.
Definitely.
And we'll get back to talking about utilitarianism and Jeremy Bentham and John Stuart Mill and utilitarianism and all and what that means for architects later on. You've been very quiet, Dr. Allspector.
Well, you're interviewing our guest, so.
We're having a conversation.
Yeah,
we're just having
good.
A conversation. Thank you for turning off your cell phone.
It's off. I just wanted to make sure.
I've decided, in passing, I have decided that because really you only need one professional degree to be fully credentialed as an architect, be it a bachelor's degree or a master's degree.
I agree.
Once you are licensed as an architect, we should address each other as doctor.
Okay,
because in Europe, we would be dottores. We would be dottores. And I think it's about time that we showed each other the kind of respect that other professions show themselves.
You mean as opposed to elbowing you in the gut and saying,
so get out of my way, you
right.
fucker.
Yeah.
This is my job. No, I'm not going to compete on fee. I'm going to compete on the brilliance of my design vision for this. When in fact, what architecture really is all about is solving problems, organizing, and responding to a set of challenges in order to make life better. It's not about what it looks like. What it looks like should be an expression of your solution to a set of problems.
Right from Viollet-le-Duc.
Yeah, our guy. He's our man. You know, he's our mascot. He's our forebear. You know about Viollet-le-Duc.
I'm starting to have doubts about that, though, you know? As I teach more and more and more,
yeah,
you know, I kind of analyze more and more, and I become, as you should, more doubtful.
Thank you, Dr. Socrates. You know what you don't know.
That's
all right. I know that I don't know a lot. Every week somebody mentions a name of someone who's done something or other, and I have to say, well, I'm drawing a blank. Now, as the editor of the e-zine, Oculus, that's Oculus, Oculus is, of course, the architectural term for an opening and a ceiling that lets the light through, most notably the Oculus of the Pantheon, the world's best building ever. Yeah, have you been there, Jessica?
Yes, I have.
Just sublime?
It was amazing. Yes.
Yes, and we're not going to analyze why it's amazing. Anybody who's been through third year of a BArch program, or you know, with a year and a half of has seen the geometry that the dome. If you describe the circle of the dome and drew it in space, it touches the floor of the rotunda of the Pantheon, and that's one of the aspects of why it is so sublime. I hope that those of you who are listening live have now rushed back to your computer and you're madly typing Google images for the Pantheon, because that's good. That's part of the educational experience here of your graduate school of the air on Burning Down the House.
How about reaching for a book?
A book?
We don't do that anymore,
right? What's that? I don't even know if I've got a book that's got the Pantheon in it.
I actually had a question.
Yeah.
Jessica. Is Oculus published anymore? Like
yes,
paper?
Oculus is a quarterly publication by the AIA New York chapter.
But it is a paper.
a paper magazine that is still published. And then in addition to it happening every quarter, we have timely news in eOculus that gets published every other week.
Right. I used to get that, yeah.
Did you retire from the AIA?
I did.
And so you should come back.
Well, so did I.
I know a lot of people have told me that.
I am thinking of coming back.
I do go there.
Because I would really like to be a part of reforming the American Institute of Architects' stance on standard contract language. And we might talk about that a little bit later. And I've spoken about this in other programs. The response to the litigious environment, toxic environment of the late 1970s led the AIA to limit the liability of their members through very specific contractual language in the standard documents. What is the B-151? Is it the... Yes. And by limiting our liability, we've also excluded our authority. And what happened then, and historically, this is what we've experienced, is the rise of the omnipotent construction manager who assumes duties and authority that once we as architects, as the prime representative of the owner, used to enjoy and get paid for.
But without liability.
We had very little liability if we did our jobs right.
No, and, I mean, and construction.
Oh, the CMs without, have no liability.
It's still, you know, we have more.
They take a 2-3.5-4% fee, and that comes out of our fee base, and of course they have no liability.
But I think that the way that the profession is changing, in that architects are diversifying their knowledge base, and with new technologies such as CNC milling and things like that, I think that architects are beginning to take back some of those responsibilities that they gave up.
Yes, absolutely. There is no reason that your CAD drawings can't go straight into production.
Exactly.
I experienced that myself in 1996, believe it or not, when I worked with the board of directors at the Bridgehampton National Bank in Bridgehampton, New York. They came to me with a very specific building in mind. It's not the building that I would have given them if they had left me to my own artistic desires, but it's the building that they wanted, and we worked through it, and I designed that building in 3D from the very beginning, so that, well, they wanted a Georgian building, and they wanted it with Ionic capitals, and we modeled the Ionic capitals in 3D, and when we were done, and we were ready to go, our CAD files as a DXF, a digital exchange file for those interested lay people, went straight to the fabricators in Canada who did fiber reinforced concrete capitals straight from our drawings. So it works, and it's a wonderful thing. Now, I didn't get any extra fee for having done that, but I was happy for the fee that I did get, because in the 1990s things were a little sketchy, and then we had the big boom. Now they're sketchy again. So any value-added service that we can bring to the table only increases our own value to the owner.
You know, we're very careful about our CAD files being used for that, actually.
Well, you don't...
We disavow we disavow any kind of, like, accuracy and all that, because it's really easy for them to be, you know, kind of misconstrued and corrupt.
And
the people who build it don't go through the normal process that they would in the old days.
If they were just using paper drawings.
Well, which is an analytical process. Say, well, what is the architect trying to do here? How can we build this? Is it this the best way? Should we offer another way? Et cetera, et cetera. They just kind of, boom, okay, let's stick it in the computer and press the button, so to speak.
But supposedly that's where Revit and building integrated technology and all of that is supposed to solve those problems, right?
Supposed to.
Yeah, well, we'll see, because the computer
I went to a few of those Revit, you know, kind of, you know, presentations at the Center for Architecture. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I got from there was not technology. I kept waiting to see this technology, It was all about management, and the management diagrams were exactly what I've been doing my whole career, which is involving all of the members of the building team.
All right. Now, you know, I mean, this is Mr. Bad News. Let's have our first break.
That's good news.
Let's have our first break a little bit about being the conveyor of bad news.
No one knows what it's like to be the bad man, to be the sad man behind blue eyes. No one knows what it's like to be hated, to be faded, to telling only lies. But my dreams, they aren't as empty as my conscience seems to be. I have hours only lonely. My love is vengeance that's never free. What it's like to feel these feelings like I do, and I blame you. No one bites back as hard on their anger. None of my pain and woe can show through. But my dreams, it's never free. When my fist clenches, crack it open before I use it and lose my cool. When I smile, tell me some bad news before I laugh. And if I swallow anything evil, put your finger down my throat. And if I shiver, please give me a blanket. Keep me warm, let me wear your coat. The bad man, to be the sad man behind blue eyes.
You're on heritageradionetwork.com. Yeah, you know, often we as architects are the bad men. You know, we get our clients and they want something, and you can't do that. We're brought to you by TechServe, TechServe.com, your number one source for everything related to the Macintosh computer on West 23rd Street in Manhattan. Our program today is engineered by Jack Inslee. Welcome back, Jack. You've been away for a while. All right, and produced and tagged by Dan Brindell. My guests this evening are Jacob Allspector, architect of New York, and Jessica Sheridan, the editor of eOculus, the New York American Institute of Architects in-house newsletter, e-zine, e-zine. And you can find it at eoculus.com, is that correct?
No, it's aiany.org/eoculus/newsletter.
Wow, okay.
You could get there from AIANY.org pretty easily.
And there are links that take you there.
Yes.
Yeah. The economy has totally decimated our profession. And it's not just us. It's also our brethren in the construction industry. I mean, we were so, so busy for a run of 5 or 6 years. And now there are so many of us who are teetering on the edge of destitution or losing our... It's tough. It's not just the world. It's not just the economy in general. The creative arts and the building trades and architecture are in the tank because there's no new construction lending or very little. The projects going forward that I see... Now, you as the editor, I mean, you got your pulse on all sorts of things. But what I see is that university spending continues. Healthcare spending limps along. There's municipal spending. There's in New York State, there's no state spending. The state is broke. Patterson's not paying people. Playing funny games. I don't know. Trying to earn interest on the money that they haven't paid to people that they owe and other such, may I say, because we're not subject to FCC rules, fuckery. What do you see that's, what do you see that's really happening in New York? And the question one and question two is, how do you find out about these things?
Well, the most interesting work, in my opinion, are the works that are being done in the public domain. Mayor Bloomberg is such a great supporter of public art and public projects, and I think that, you know, starting with the High Line or even Times Square and all of those projects, I think, are really revitalizing the city in a new way.
Absolutely.
There are also a lot of small projects. I think pop-up stores are popping up, and there are a lot of temporary art spaces and those kinds of things in the smaller scale that are happening that are quite interesting.
Who's paying for those?
You know, I don't know. That's a great question.
I mean, where's the money? Because we need to follow the money, and it seems to be hiding. What do you find, Jake?
You know, my practice very limited so far, because I can't afford to do public work because they don't always pay on time.
Yeah.
So I've been lucky, and I do private, you know, educational and cultural work. And that's been pretty good, knock on wood.
Do you have agreements? They're a pretty good your institutional
market
work.
Right now. Yeah. I've been very lucky. Yeah. I totally unplanned, just the way things worked out.
and you've done some real architecture. I mean, that project that you did in Utah that you showed me is kick-ass good. I mean, that is real architecture.
Yeah. Actually, that's a public works project, but it was before the crash, and it'd been funds that had been appropriated, and it was design-build so that they could guarantee the schedule and the budget and the program.
There's the CM again.
Well, yes and no.
To what extent were you involved in guaranteeing the schedule outcome?
The design had to be buildable in, you know, less than 2 years.
And that's tight.
That is very tight. From when we started the competition, it was 2 years and 2 months until dedication. And the competition was 2 months long. And within a month after the award, we were ordering steel and in the ground, building foundations.
That's very hot.
And
still
finishing
the
design, which is actually, you know, it's a great way to work and not waste time and all of that. And you have to have a collaborative, again, going back to my comment before, it didn't involve BIM or Revit, but it involved all of the management aspects that they tout.
So you were an early adopter of integrated project development.
Well, you know, my first, one of my first full projects out of school was a so-called fast track before they even had a name to it. And it was, you know, like 16 months.
I know that you graduated 3 years before me, but the words fast track did exist.
Well, the word construction manager, didn't exist.
Absolutely not. So, Jessica, part two of my inquiry, mm-hmm. I want to learn from you. How do you find out about these things? Do people send you press releases?
Well, sure. I think that that's the typical way that people send information about the projects that are happening in their firms.
Also, not what I have to do.
Also, attending a lot of events, going to the Center for Architecture a lot certainly helps keep me in tune with what's happening in the city.
Tell our listeners where that is and what it's about.
Yeah, it's a good
thing.
The
Center for Architecture is 536 LaGuardia Place. And
where is that? If you were
it's in the
coming
village.
From outside of in the village, which
it's
is below 14th Street.
Right. It's between Bleecker and West 3rd Street.
South of Washington Square Park. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
it's a storefront.
It's a storefront. It has a gallery. They have quite a number of events that happen every single day of the week, practically. It's really the center for the American Institute of Architects New York chapter, as well as the American Society of Landscape Architects.
I did not know that.
And the Center for Architecture Foundation, which does programs for school children.
Excellent.
That's a great
and I
thing.
Might be missing a couple of other organizations.
I didn't
too,
know everybody
sorry.
Was in there, but that's yeah. you know, that's great. And it's a much more accessible space than what they had previously in the Villard houses, which was this weird assemblage of Baroque kind of dark chambers where you imagined that weird stuff like some of those scenes in Eyes Wide Shut, you know, the Kubrick movie, were going on after hours. It was very dark. It was very Baroque, and I'm glad that you're out of there.
Yes.
So what you're saying is that you do what reporters do everywhere. You go around and you listen and you take notes and you talk to people.
Basically, yes.
That's great. So do you consider yourself more an intern architect or a reporter?
Well, my background is in architecture, so I feel that I'm
some of your background is in architecture.
Well, yes. My bachelor's of arts degree was a focus in architectural history and studio art, and that always led toward architecture. I decided I wanted to be an architect when I was 11 years old. So late.
Eight.
That's great.
Eight. Yeah. 50 years of architecture. Wow. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Same here.
All right.
Really? Yeah, so it was always about architecture, and I love writing. I enjoy doing it. It's something that I always just did on the side, and I see that it's really great that I'm able to do both, but my sole focus is architecture, really, and then whatever I can do to also contribute to the written world is also something that I love to do.
Mm. That's good. I'm looking at a link that you sent me. Emerging Leaders Take the Stage in the Community. Enya's Design Competitions. Not to be confused with the Irish, singer. Pop singer. Yeah. What is Enya?
Enya stands for the Emerging New York Architects. It's a committee of the New York chapter of the AIA. I'm co-chair and have been for the last couple of years. And I've been involved since 2003. We do a number of different programs, from design competitions. We did our first built competition this year that's on Governor's Island, which we're really excited about. We've had an international ideas competition that's happened biennially, which has been quite successful. It's has quite a broad reach internationally, actually. Our last competition, we had entries from 41 countries.
Wow.
Do you
call it the New York Biennale?
We should.
Yeah.
And we also have programs.
You could give out the Golden Apple Award, like the Golden Lion that Rem Koolhaas just got in the Venice Biennale.
Yeah, right now we call it the Enya Prize, but we have had a number of conversations about some better titles for it.
Yeah.
We also have training programs for emerging professionals to, we're encouraging people to get their license. And so we have a number of ARE boot camps and weekend training sessions. And we really do try to get everyone to become licensed, because that's really the goal of our committee.
good, because mm-hmm. until you're licensed, you're a civilian.
Yes.
We've spoken about that at great length in other conversations. My good friend Matt Arnold, who's an architect and a fellow grad of Cooper Union. You know Matt, right?
No, I don't.
You don't know him? He's one of the rambunctious crowd.
I shouldn't. Maybe I've met him.
Well, you know Nick, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, they're tight.
Well, I probably met him.
Well, you need to meet Matt Arnold. Matt Arnold's fixation and primary concern about our profession is the amount of time that it takes from graduation from whatever degree to licensing. And it's running 12 to 15 years. Traditionally, you were expected to be able to do that in 3. So the NCARB is not apparently making it better. And also, and he and I in this agree, that the notion that your employer, if you can find one these days, is competent, willing, and to a certain degree enthusiastic about teaching you what you need to know of those things that you don't get in school, mm-hmm. is actually going to happen. I mean, you're working for pay, some kind of pay, and the social contract between employer and employee that used to happen, where the architect wanted to teach the apprentice, because having more architects in the studio was a mark of prestige, no longer obtains. In many, many cases.
In many cases, not everywhere.
Especially if you're in a very, very large firm like Perkins Eastman, it's difficult to know who's... I mean, I was at Perkins Eastman for a year. Mm-hmm. I was attempting to create a quality assurance program and to mentor and train young intern architects into the arcana of construction administration. But it was so big that it was a very difficult management challenge.
And construction administration is one of the toughest experience points out of all of the intern development program.
Oh, absolutely.
Categories.
Sure, sure.
For many interns.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you do a plan and you've got things dimensioned to an eighth of an inch, which is folly. And you go out in the field, and this happens to everyone. Sooner or later, you'll run into a carpenter and they'll hold up the carpenter's pencil, which is...
an eighth of an inch thick.
It's an eighth of an inch thick on one side, and it's an inch thick on the other side.
Right.
It's this oblong, crazy pencil. And they'll make a mark on the wall, and they'll say... And they'll make it, you know, like, obliquely, you know, part, you know, sideways. And that mark is at least 3/8 of an inch wide, and they'll say... That's the accuracy, Mr. Smarty Pants architect, that we build to. Don't give me these fucking plans with eighths of an inch. That's not the real world. And then you feel humiliated. Then a week later, you realize that you've been had, but it's useful. It's important. Mm-hmm. That's why, for example, dimensioning masonry works when you work to masonry dimensions, because the masons know to work to an increment of 4 or 8 inches. So don't get fancy, you know? Work with the constraints of the material, which is something you don't learn until you start to think about, well, how am I going to build it?
That's true. I mean, going back to your question about NCARB, I think it has traditionally, or in recent years, taken a lot longer to get licensed. I think that now that there is ARE concurrency with IDP, which is a new thing as of last October, I believe, intern architects can now take their exams the same time that they're completing their internship. And that wasn't the case before. You had to complete 3 years worth of hours before you could start taking your exams. And now you can do both at once. And
well,
so
you mean now that you have a degree, you can take the...
Correct,
you
yes.
can take the
once
first part.
Once you have an accredited degree.
You can take the first part mm-hmm. of the ARE.
Right.
Which is
that's how it used to be.
That's what you and I did.
Yeah, it keeps changing, and they keep, you know, trying different
and
things.
And, you know, really, there's nothing wrong with that, because if you're a right-minded person, those lessons come up, and you will continue to reacquaint yourselves with those things. I mean, in my own case, this last spring, I taught structures in a community college. People who might want to later go on to an accredited architectural program, and some of their credits would carry forward. But I was able to do it because I was always structurally aware as an architect. I may be a bit of a freak. For smaller structures, I always calculated the structural requirements of small beams, steel columns, steel beams, because the fabricating shop detailer does the connections anyway. You just give them the reactions, and they take care of it. And as an architect, I was practicing on more of a European model, where the distinction between I'm only doing the architecture and you, the structural engineer, you do the structures, does not obtain. And then that goes back to the AIA wanting to, in the standard documents, limit our liability, but that also limits our authority. And so we've become flaccid a little bit as architects. It's like, I don't want to know about that. I don't want to know about that. I mean, Philip Johnson made that a point of pride. It's like, I know the toilet's flush, but I don't want to know how the pipes work.
But in a way, that's why the ARE exams are useful, because when you're forced to study for them, you have to learn those things.
Which is why it took him 20 years to become licensed, you know?
That's true. I understand that he took the ARE very many times, and that during the lunch break, his servant would bring in his lunch and lay out a little linen tablecloth and the silver and the salt and pepper shakers. And yeah. Yes, Mr. Johnson.
I'm sure he didn't have to carry his drafting board to the exam.
I'm sure he didn't, but we're not all...
That's old stuff.
Nowadays,
I guess you
we're not all
some,
born into
some
wealth and privilege.
Program.
Let's take another little musical break and talk about what's good and what's happening in New York.
Silk and lace
and sad.
love this town. Don't you love this town, man?
I love this
town.
Don't
you love this town, Jessica?
Yeah, I love this town.
That was anywhere else.
That was, of course, Nancy Griffith and Jimmy Buffett singing I Love This Town. And here we are in Brooklyn in the garden of Roberta's Restaurant on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. We are burning down the house. And my guests are Jessica Sheridan and Jake Allspector. We're brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com, your number one source for everything related to the Macintosh computer, plus widescreen monitors, plus a really great pro audio shop on West 23rd Street. So, Jessica, what is good? You mentioned the mayor's devotion to public works of architecture, and certainly pre-bust, the city spent a lot of money on Riverside South, that wonderful park that runs almost continuously. I mean, Chelsea Piers are a little bit of discontinuity down to the Battery. And it's a wonderful park. It's a wonderful thing designed by my neighbor in Rowayton, Connecticut, Tom Balsley.
Does he live there now?
Yes, sir. Wow. I saw him on the train not long ago. I know where he lives, and I'm not going to tell you.
Don't want to know.
No, Rowayton's a kicking little kind of like arty kind of place where...
I thought you loved this town.
I love this town. I can't afford this town. I could have a closet in this town, or I could have a two-bedroom house.
Do you live in the city, Jessica?
I do. I live on the Upper West Side.
Okay.
All right. Well, we like the Upper West Side. Mm-hmm. We spent a lot of time up in Morningside Heights over the last several years. So what else is happening that's good and great? And I guess because we have a lot of time on our hands, a lot of us architects are doing... mitzvahs, works of good cheer and good karma, and not getting paid for it. But
well, the Emerging New York Architects Committee, they hosted a design and build competition for the summer on Governor's Island. We teamed with Figment, which is a participatory arts organization on the island, and the Structural Engineering Association of New York. And we had an international design competition to design a pavilion on Governor's Island. It's called the Living Pavilion, the winning entry.
It's wonderful. I was there the first weekend that it opened.
Oh, great. It's great.
Yeah, I have to say, it looks a lot like the Serpentine Pavilion of 3 years ago. That's okay.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Good ideas have legs.
Who designed that one?
I don't remember.
That's usually invited to some star, right?
I don't remember. But it was a warped plane,
hyperbolic paraboloid shape.
But it was much bigger, timber, reticulated structure. And we could look it up.
Have you seen this one? I really enjoyed.
No,
it.
I haven't.
I loved it.
I don't know that it was. I was 3 weeks in. Jack, when was Meetopia?
Oh yeah, it was up there. It's been up June 5th.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I missed it.
You missed it.
I missed it. There weren't signs saying, to the pavilion.
It is made from milk crates, and it is a kind of a barrel-vaulted hyperbolic shape designed by Ann Ha and Barang Bahin, who are both 2 years out of graduate school, actually, and they're both full-time architecture interns on the side, which is... really nice for them, I think. And we had over 70 volunteers come out to help build it.
That's really great.
Yeah.
And what, what does one do in this pavilion? Hang out?
It's a shade pavilion. It has hanging plants on the inside of the pavilion. And so through evapotranspiration, which is a term I just recently learned through this pavilion, it's very cool inside, and it's really nice to...
So it's not just your 70s fern bar. The ferns actually do something.
They actually do something.
That's
and
very
it's great.
Cool.
Yeah, and the idea behind the competition was to really think about sustainability in a new way. And so the designers really did look at the life cycle of their pavilion in terms of where the milk crates came from, part of the reason why they used milk crates. And then after the pavilion has to close on October 3rd, it'll be disassembled and reassembled, possibly as a green wall in one location. Teachers have said that they have interest in using them as learning tools. And then the ones that don't get donated to another place, the plants will be returned to the Green Thumb Program, which is through the Department of Parks and Recreation, and they donated about half of the plants.
And those plants end up back on that floating barge laboratory space in the Hudson River.
The science
River.
Barge.
Yes. And, is that where they go back?
Possibly.
Yeah, cool.
And the other milk crates will go back to the manufacturer and get melted down and turned into new milk crates again.
Wow. And what about the wood... the primary structure, which is the wood.
The wood, yeah, I'm not sure what's going to happen with those. Mm. If we do the living wall.
You read your research, don't you?
Yeah. No, I've been there, and I admired
it. Oh, okay,
it.
Okay. Yeah.
No, so if we do the living wall, then it can be incorporated into that as well.
But why couldn't it stay? So. I mean, if it's good this summer, it'll be good next summer.
Well, the hope is that this becomes an annual competition for architects.
Like the Serpentine Gallery in London.
Correct.
Excellent. Yes, 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 yes. That's a really great idea. What else comes to mind?
For what exactly?
Well, what's good, what's happening, what's new. Someone who doesn't read the architectural press would like to... for example, my sister Nancy is visiting for 2 days from Cincinnati. Where should I take her to show her something of architectural import that's ephemeral? It's not going to be here next year or 5 years from now when she next brings herself to our Manhattan shores.
You mean other than Governor's Island?
Well, I really rather doubt that I'm going to be able to get her out there because she's even just balking at the idea of using this subway.
It's a 5-minute ferry ride. It's a beautiful ride over there.
Yeah, it's great. Free. Great to do. And if she likes biking, you can,
you can rent bikes out there.
They're from Cincinnati. They drive. They eat sausage.
Well,
they drink beer.
They want a new experience, which is why they're coming to
New York. I think they're looking for whatever.
They left their car behind, I hope.
I think they're flying here, and then they're getting on a boat to go up to Halifax. No, I think that what they're looking for actually is whatever has replaced Cats on
take
Broadway.
Take them to Broadway.
Mama Mia or something.
Take them to Broadway and enjoy yourself.
We're going to stand in line in the tickets line tomorrow during the monsoon.
Well, the TKTS booth is quite spectacular.
Well, yes, it is.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
I mean, the glass engineering of that is really something else. Mm-hmm. It's very robust, and it glows so nicely. It's true. Anything else that you can think of?
Well, the obvious is the High Line. That's the big...
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Yes, and the High Line is...
And that's not too far from Broadway.
No, it's not.
But
no,
not ephemeral. But
no.
Ephemeral. I guess PS1 has a ephemeral.
Oh, yeah, PS1, the Young Architect Program, has a great installation this year by So Eel.
Who?
So Eel is their name. It stands for, I believe, Solid Objectives Eisenberg Lou.
How do you spell that?
S-O-I-L. So Eel.
And what's their installation look like?
It's called Pole Dance, and it has
all right.
A canopy over PS1 over the courtyard made from PVC piping and netting. And the netting is above you with beach balls that create shade, but then it's a very interactive experience. There are mist pools around, and they have a party every Saturday where they have DJs and that kind
of
thing. And
nice.
It's a nice installation.
The mist and the roving beach balls.
Right.
Really, and they may not even be aware of it, has a precursor in the 1964-65 Pepsi Pavilion at the World's Fair. Do you remember that?
I do. I remember the whole fair. That was pretty amazing.
There was a yard.
We're dating ourselves. Sorry.
But this is part of the whole notion of being a fully informed architect is to understand that you may have a great idea, but somebody may have done it as well or better. And I think the sculptor who did that was John Pearson, but they had moving robotized, they looked like trash cans. They were tall and cylindrical and rounded on the top, and they just randomly move around, and when they bumped into something, they would turn around and go in a different direction. And then there were pools of mist. So we must always be mindful of, in New York and everywhere else.
What
someone else had
here
that idea.
In 64. That's pretty cool.
What? It was very cool.
That you came all the way to see that.
No, we had moved to New Jersey in 1963.
I thought you were Chicago.
So we just left. We left in 63. Mm-hmm. So that
good.
My parents really wanted me to go to high school with mobsters.
But that was an amazing era in New York. I think very similar to the 2000s or whatever they call it.
Yeah, the early 2000s.
Because there was so much
creativity,
new construction in the 50s and 60s. It was all like the new city, and very similar to what's happened recently.
And there was a real a sense of optimism,
right,
in the World's Fair.
I mean, you had Frank Lloyd Wright with the Guggenheim, you had the World's Fair with all those wacko buildings, and Park Avenue was being reshaped, with Lieberhaus and Seagram and the UN.
It's true.
Huntington, Hartford, and
right,
all kinds of buildings.
Which
all
I'm glad
place.
That you mentioned, because that then eventually was converted into the Mad Museum, of Art and Design, and the two chief curators of the Mad Museum will be here with us next week with your good friend Professor Rod Knox as
good. I'm glad
guest
I'm
interlocutor.
Going to be on vacation.
Yes.
But I'll be thinking of him.
Well, you can always listen
to... Send him my love.
I will find a way to convey that.
Hi, Rod.
But we digress. What do you think? Because you must know everybody in the profession, one way or the other. What do you think comes next? Will a lot of people leave the profession because they don't have jobs, and they find that because they're smart and talented, they could be a hedge fund trader?
I actually don't think that's the case. That's the big fear, because that's what's happened before. But I think that the way that architecture is moving and in the way that it's diversifying, it's becoming much more collaborative. It's becoming much less about how an architect has one role. There are different specializations that come to the table with different projects that I think firms are just becoming broader in their scope. I don't think it's any more about the one architect and then everyone who works for that person. It's a collaborative effort to see the opportunities that are out there, whether it's through new technologies, whether it's through different ways of construction, or whether it's just in terms of their backgrounds. I think that that's really where the profession is
going.
Right.
So what are we doing that we're not, that heretofore we have not done? If we're diversifying into what? Graphic design, integrating our practices with landscape architects, or what?
Sure. I mean, I think the term building is becoming much more vague than it was. It's no longer really just the structure, and you have the exterior and interior, and that's what defines it. It's melting into art. It's melting into landscape. There's no longer really a boundary between these different professions, I think. And it's becoming much more participatory. Much more of the public is engaged in the new projects that are happening out there. And I think they're interested to see what's happening. And I think that emerging architects who are out of work are really tapping into that. And they're taking advantage of these empty lots. They're taking advantage of empty storefronts. And they're trying to do something in the meantime.
That's great, provided they can pay their rent. Are your emerging architects being de facto subsidized by their roommates, girlfriends, boyfriends, and family?
I mean, it's quite possible.
In my own case, I was subsidized by my significant other for a period of quite some time.
It's definitely not easy.
Very difficult.
For those people out there who are unemployed.
Thank you, Katie.
It's definitely not easy, but I think that people are making the best of the situation, and I don't think that the option these days is to leave the profession. I think that people are really struggling to try to stay in it.
So there's optimism.
Yes.
That's a wonderful thing. Jack, roll the outro. I think we're done. This has been Where We Burn Down the House. Every Wednesday, 7 Eastern Time on heritageradionetwork.com. We've been brought to you by TechServe, engineered by Jack Inslee, produced and tagged by Dan Brindell. My guests have been Jacob Allspector, architect, and Jessica Sheridan, emerging architect. Thanks for listening. Speak with you soon. Jack, let it run for at least 2 minutes. Thank you.